Hi, I'm Guy Powell, and welcome to the next episode of the Backstory on Marketing and AI. If you haven't already done so, please visit prorelevant.com and sign up for all of these episodes and podcasts. I am the author of the newly released book, The Post-COVID Marketing Machine: Prepare Your Team to Win, and you can find out more information on this at marketingmachine.prorelevant.com. You know, there's so much going on in marketing AI and e-commerce, and I guess the question for all of us marketers, are we ready? Are we really ready? And things like personalization is one of those where we can potentially offer really great value to our brands, to our companies, and to our clients. So, whether you're a small marketer or a large marketer just getting into AI, these can be a clear differentiator for you in the market. Today, I'm interviewing Alex Back, and he is the CEO of Couch.com. Kind of crazy that he was able to win the ownership of a single word domain name of Couch.com. Very interested in hearing that story. So let me tell you a little bit about Alex. Alex is an entrepreneur in the e-commerce space, and currently founder and CEO of Couch.com. That is a brand new startup focusing on solving the biggest issue for consumers in the furniture industry. Where the heck do I buy a couch? Previously co-founded and ran the popular online furniture brand Apt2B and led it to a successful exit and transition last year. He's had a lot of experiences in many aspects of business operations, marketing, e-commerce, retail, and management. He's been featured on numerous TV shows and podcasts and is very excited to connect with a new audience here. Alex, welcome and so good to have you.
Why, thank you, Guy. I appreciate it. And I am very excited to be here and connect with your audience.
Yeah, thank you. And well, let's find out how you got started in marketing. So what is your backstory in marketing and your marketing career?
That's also a great question. My backstory is different than some others. I used to be an actor and a singer, and I had side jobs working in the furniture industry. So through that, I met my business partner, former business partner, and best buddy, Matt Herman, who was very dialed in to the furniture space. And so he and I, we had a few little side businesses here in Los Angeles where I live. And he sort of had this aha experience that we all hope to have in our lives and careers, which is where when he realized that online furniture was really coming. So this was back in the early aughts. And I like to tell a story because it's a good one. I think that everybody can relate to. So he was a sales rep. He was a traveling salesman at the time. He was doing very well selling reclining couches to retailers across California. Then he gets an email out of the blue from somebody at a store called CSN, but this store was online. So they wanted to open up an account. He checked with his management about his ability to do so because, they have territories with sales reps, et cetera. And they said, okay, that seems like no problem. Let's see how it goes. You can go ahead and be our online division. So he opened them up. He started just by giving them pictures and some information. That's all they needed. Next day, he wakes up to an order. Day after that, three orders, then 10, then 12. Well, some of you are familiar with the word CSN or the name CSN. They're the ones who became Wayfair. So the opportunity was very clear to us, at least a little bit earlier than others, I think, adopted it. And we got into the furniture space together, sort of put our heads together about, using our experience in operations and just common sense to get this business started. So we got it started, and luckily, we didn't have competition for a few years that was really measurable. There were very few independent retailers at the time in the furniture space. And it gave us a lot of time to really do a lot of trial and error, both from the marketing perspective and on the furniture and supply chain side, which you really have to master to be successful in this particular business. So we grew the company, figured out what worked for us from a marketing perspective. had a very predictable mix that carried over for years, and we had to only tweak really a lot of it, with a portion of it being allocated to experimentation and trying something new, but the bulk of it being rooted in the foundations of what really worked for us. And we sort of rode that horse all the way to an acquisition. Our company was acquired by a large furniture chain. I stayed on for a few years learning about the brick and mortar side of the business that they represented, and sort of tried my best to mend the gap between the two entities, between brick and mortar and online. So I learned a lot about omnichannel advertising and marketing through that experience as well. I left that company a year ago and had another aha moment for me, which led me to pursue acquiring the domain couch.com.
Well, fantastic. So, well, tell us about couch.com.
Okay. So couch.com, in essence, and my aha moment was that this is something that can really, really scale a lot larger than I had previously thought. Now, my experience at Apartment2B was being a direct-to-consumer, e-commerce, retailer, and marketer. And I didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do with my next project. I was considering staying in the furniture space, but I wasn't quite certain. Then it occurred to me that something like a couch.com, something with a lot of cachet associated with it, could really achieve scale and solve the problem that we're setting out to solve in mass, which is nobody really knows where to go to buy furniture. No one knows, as you said before, where the heck to go buy a couch. And our goal is to get out in front of it and support users in their journey and their buying journey to find the perfect couch for their needs, and to support the many retailers across the country, especially those in the brick and mortar space, that are really having trouble communicating and marketing to their customers, while D2C brands like the one that I used to run are dominating the online space, and some of the juggernauts like the Wayfairs and Overstock or Bath & Beyond and Amazons of the world. So that's the essence of couch.com. And I could tell you more about the domain acquisition if you think your users would be interested in
it. Yeah, let's hold off on that. I think that definitely would be fascinating. I'm sure it was fun, expensive, but hopefully ultimately going to be very, very valuable for you. So now one of the challenges that I would imagine, and I haven't bought a couch, or my wife and I haven't bought a couch in a long time, but you know, if I were going to buy a couch, I would like to maybe go into the brick and mortar and sit on it and lay on it and even sleep on it if I could. So now clearly there's a lot more to it, and there's a lot more technology and analytics behind it. So tell us a little bit about how AI can help to shape and form and improve that whole customer buyer journey as they're in the process of selecting out a couch that they're going to use and keep for, you know, quite a few years.
Great question. So I think that, you know, AI is going to have a measurable impact on our shopping and buying experiences and us as marketers, you know, to market to our customers moving forward. The two big ways that I am really focused on right now with my team are personalization, as we discussed already, and visualization. So personalization, just to give you anecdotally, giving an example, is getting information from a customer about what are the things that are most important to them. When someone goes to buy a couch or they need a new couch, whether they realize it or not, there's usually one or two guiding variables that are deal breakers for them. I need something that's great for kids. I need something immediately. I need something that's this size or under in my New York apartment, or it won't fit. These variables don't often get addressed by any sort of marketing entity in the furniture space until way down the funnel, until you've tried all these other bells and whistles to get customers interested. So part of our strategy of personalization is really needling in on what is most important to that user immediately, and using AI to make that a seamless or much easier process for them. Quite literally spitting out results using an AI-powered shopping assistant that otherwise would be burdensome for the customer to find themselves.
Yeah, interesting. And you know, you would think, And I don't know, maybe because I've done some interesting things in other areas of furniture. And you would think that a big ticket item for furniture would have a kind of a long sales cycle. And I'm wondering if that is truly the case, or whether you're really getting people that are already way down in the funnel, and they're just trying to choose between one or two or three different options that they might have, and then making that decision relatively quickly. So, you know, how do you see that part of the purchase decision process working, and making sure that if I was going to buy online, that I actually find it comfortable, it fits my height, my weight, my this, my kids, my that. How do you see that happening, and does AI play a role in that?
Absolutely. I think that first of all, the time to conversion, the sales funnel for the furniture industry, specifically buying a couch, is very long. Just to give a sense, obviously it's different between users and different parts of the industry, but it's generally around 3 weeks. So this is a longer tail conversion cycle when you compare it to other e-commerce products. This is not a t-shirt that people are buying, or something that they purchase off of Instagram in 20 seconds. This is something that takes a lot of time. So why does it take time? This is something I've pondered very deeply over the last 15 years as I've been, you know, thinking about this and marketing to these individuals and trying to shorten that conversion time. Because if you shorten the conversion time, you eliminate a lot of the competition around you. And that's obviously all ultimately always our goal. My sense is that it always used to be because it's a big ticket item. It's something that costs $1,000, $2,000, $5,000, and it takes people a lot of time. But then now we see a lot of other items that are of a similar price point converting a lot more quickly. So maybe that's not exactly it, I was thinking. I think that it generally has to do with a customer's level of comfort, feeling like they are getting a good deal, feeling like they're buying something that's of good quality, just feeling comfortable in their purchase. There are no brands in the furniture industry, or very few. There's very little for a customer to latch onto to build trust. The retailers do a decent job of that, but people don't buy furniture often enough. So they're not getting marked. There's no sort of like regular, it's like the opposite of a subscription. It's something that happens every number of years. I mean, you said yourself, it's been a long time. So knowing where to shop and feeling comfortable is very difficult. How do we solve that problem? We give the customer as much information as possible using their attributes that they give us, or variables or factors that are important to them. And then using our AI-powered search engine to give them results of products, retailers in-store, retailers online, education articles about how to get a great deal or how to negotiate in a furniture store. We can sort of provide a very robust experience to create that comfort, hopefully in less than 3 weeks.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I think you're probably right. It is about a 3 week conversion cycle. Although there's certainly, you know, maybe some upper funnel activities that need to take place. But I guess once you're kind of now past that, and yep, I am so sick and tired of sitting or laying on this couch, I'm ready to go, then, you know, then I go out and start, you know, doing maybe some internet searches, or then, you know, go out to a couple stores and just try them out and see what's out there. So that makes a lot of sense that it could actually be 3 weeks. And now I've noticed, though, that there's even in retail, you can go into, let's say, a Costco, and they've got like couches and other things like that. Do you think the purchase cycle changes, or the purchase time frame changes depending upon what the retail channel is, or is it, you know, pretty much 3 weeks, or is it shorter or longer based on, you know, what you see in different stores that you might be going to?
I love that you use Costco as an example, because in my former company, we did a lot of work with Costco. I'm very, very familiar with their infrastructure and sort of the culture. We've done a lot of marketing with Costco, and it needles in on the one thing that I've been sort of speaking to you about over the last 15 minutes, which is buyer trust. Costco, Costco has an amazing buying team. And when you walk into Costco, you can trust that this is a great place to buy something. A, you're getting a good deal. B, it's going to be a very good quality because everybody, including the vendors, knows Costco's return policy. So you better make a really good product if you're going to sell it and do business with Costco. And ultimately, the brand has created so much trust that that's a conversion that can happen in a single visit. And I know that because we used to sell couches in store at Costco as special event. So people would come in, they're there for their diapers, they're there for their hummus, and we show them some couches. Well, we are able to write up sales for customers without them even leaving and coming back. So it was usually either a one visit or a two visit endeavor. It's proof positive of the fact that if a buyer has comfort and trust, they're going to be much more willing to convert. And that's really what we're trying to do, is give the customer, arm them with that level of trust that they need to feel comfortable buying something that is generally, for most people, uncomfortable to do.
Well, I like your point about the trust factor, and especially when the item itself, the brand of the item itself, is relatively unknown, but the brand of the retailer or the brand of the retail channel is very well known. So, and to your point, I mean, Costco's got such a great brand and the returns policy and everything else that goes around it, that you can trust that when you make that one visit, or even if you buy it online, that when you do that one visit from them, that you're going to get something that you can trust that it's going to be able to, you know, solve your needs. And if it doesn't, it's, you know, the risk is relatively low because you can return it.
Oh, yes. And you know, people do return stuff. The famous Christmas tree in February anecdote, you know, people bringing back Christmas trees they got at Costco for a full refund. Hey, they'll give it to you.
Yeah. I've got stories too of friends of mine, and they've kept things for a long time and brought them back.
Yeah.
So now you mentioned online visualization, and I could imagine, you know, when you're making a higher ticket price and something that not only has to feel good, but it has to look good, it has to fit into the living room or wherever it's going to go. So the visualization tools are becoming really important. And then AI now can be a part of that. So tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. So I've been I've had my finger on the pulse of the online furniture visualization market. I for years have been like dialed into what are the technology providers that are serving our industry that are creating solutions for online furniture retailers or online furniture marketers. So there have been a few sort of phases over the last decade. The first was just 3D scanning and 3D image generation. And what this did was sort of take us from zero to one in terms of being able to show like 100 different fabrics on something versus only the two that you're able to photograph at a reasonable price. Then it moved on and AR started coming out about, you know, 5 to 7 years ago. And everyone was like, thought that this was going to revolutionize shopping. And I think it really didn't. I think it's safe to say that now. And especially in the furniture space, I know, because I've seen the internal metrics, people who engaged with it, they did convert at a much higher rate, but very few people engaged with it. They didn't really want to take the time. Why? Because I don't think the technology was exactly where it needed to be to afford for the proper level of visualization. In simpler terms, this stuff looks cartoony, and it still does when you're talking about augmented reality and even VR. But where we are now and what AI-powered tools have allowed us to do is really show a customer what something might look like in their space. Now, Wayfair has a tremendous tool where, and there are a few apps that accomplish the same thing, but Wayfair is doing something amazing where you can, you know, take a picture of your living room and you throw it into the AI generator, and it'll give you sort of a brand new living room that looks realistic with no full, you know, realistic images that you would get on a platform like Midjourney or something else in the AI space. And then it shows you the products right next to it that you can buy. Now, whether you want to buy those products or not, I think really understanding whether or not you want a white couch in your space, or if you can have something that is purple, or larger or more cushiony, you know, it answers, it checks a lot of the boxes. Whether the customer is going to convert online or in store, it gives them a lot better sense of comfort knowing what they're, you know, what they're seeking. So I think getting to the point of a customer feeling comfortable about exactly what they're looking for is step one. And we can use visualization tools for that. And then step two is guiding them in the direction of the retailer, whether it's an in-store retailer near them or it's an online retailer, the place that's going to have what they're looking for.
Mm. Well, and I like your point. It definitely reduces the number of variables, and or then it leads to very specific questions about what to ask if you, or what to find out in case you have some thoughts as to, you know, what it looks like or what it could look like virtually in your living room, as opposed to, you know, trying to go to the store and figure things out and then coming back. To be honest with you, I can't do that. I mean, unless I have it online. If I have to do that, then it's my wife. I'm going to let her take care of that. And I'm going to go, yes, dear, it's all yours. But if I can see it online, I mean, you do that nowadays when you buy clothes and other things, you can see exactly what that fabric is going to look like, the color is going to look like. And it's pretty impressive. And I can imagine for a high ticket purchase like this, that it, you know, it can really make a difference to shortening that sales cycle.
Absolutely. And very well said. As I said before, we've seen that when we get customers engaged in this way, even with lesser technology than what's available today, that they convert at a lot higher rates. I'm talking like 15 to 18 times what a normal customer who did not go through a visualization tool like this. So imagine if we get more customers into that funnel by having something that actually works and actually is helpful. This is something that I think for technology companies in this space is worth investing in, and for marketers, really worth investing into, even though it can be quite pricey to get your foot in the door. Yeah.
Well, I'm just worried about whether I can get the couch through the door.
That's another thing.
Yeah, exactly. So let's shift gears. Well, maybe it's not too much, but marketing. You know, when you want to market something, you definitely want to make sure that you've got the right channels, the right activities, the right creative in place. Tell us what you found about how to make sure your marketing works.
Yeah. So I think in the past, I mean, couch.com, just to level set, is, you know, we're still getting going, and we're have a completely sort of different initial marketing approach than I did at my former company, ABT2B or Apartment2B. We, and the former company basically really got dialed into what was working for us and relentlessly pursued that rather than spraying and praying, you know, hoping that you're going to find this unicorn. Figuring out what is working and what your ceiling might be and being okay with that and trying to make it work, I think is very, very important. And that was successful for us. So when I say this from talking, advertising on Meta, the Meta properties, Facebook and Instagram is extremely fruitful for us, but it's not necessarily an easy endeavor, because you're not marketing to a group of customers who are actually shopping for furniture. You're going to the town plaza and figuring out who might be looking for furniture. That's very different in some ways, marketing to a mass audience and trying to find your customer base with the right ad copy and the right targeting or messaging. So that was really, that took a number of years of refinement to get to a place there. And with our Google advertising in a similar way, to figure out what the mix is. And then sort of, you know, my personal key to success was just relentlessly pursuing that baseline of what is working for us and not being tempted to change that too much. So then we'd have a percentage of our ad spend or allocation and focus to, you know, experimental things or new, the new and greatest, latest and greatest. But generally we stuck to three things, Google and Meta advertising, Meta advertising, Google advertising, and affiliate marketing, which was extremely successful for us over the years. And I'm very excited to sort of get back into that space with Couch.com and really see what it can do, because I think there's a lot of opportunity there.
Yeah, absolutely. Agree with you. So one of the things we do is we measure marketing effectiveness, you know, across all the channels and for, you know, mid-sized to large brands. And I think to your point, you know, sticking to the knitting, first of all, figuring out what works, but then sticking to the knitting because you know that it works. And then maybe you do some experiments on a very small piece of your budget, but you're not doing spraying and praying. You are really sticking to the knitting across the way. Now, Google has, unfortunately, and well, Apple has already completed it, I guess, but Google now is starting to remove the old cookies that everyone loved and cherished and lived with and now maybe even die with. I don't know. So how do you see what is going to happen as the cookies kind of slowly disappear?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, you know, we've been addressing this in various forms over the years. There have been milestones on different platforms where we moved in the affiliate space, for instance, we moved to a cookie-less model on all the major platforms in anticipation of something like this happening, and found other ways to leverage our first party data. I mean, this has happened before is what I'm trying to say. So ultimately, I think in the past, you know, you sort of wait for things to materialize, wait until you have a problem. I wouldn't necessarily overcorrect for no reason. And when you start to see a problem, address it immediately and do whatever is necessary to fix it. So that could be in the form of, you know, adopting a certain sort of technology or attribution platform. There's plenty of them out there that really help us understand better what our customers are doing. There's also something to be said about simplicity. And that's where I am focused for Couch.com. I'm looking to have our marketing attribution be a lot simpler than, you know, other platforms may be doing right now, which is that ultimately our job is to send traffic to retailers around the country and let them do their job to convert or sell to the customer. So I don't think that it needs to be this heavy attribution, cookie and pixel laden experience to track our effectiveness. I think it'll be a lot more obvious, and we can use some more basic metrics to track our effectiveness with a given retailer or brand. So I guess I would say, you know, take it easy, take it slow is our approach. See what happens. Don't overcorrect before something does happen, and keep it simple, because at the end of the day, marketing can be simpler than we all sort of give it credit for.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think I like your point about simplicity. So what's the next big thing? What's the next new normal for marketing?
Well, I think what we're seeing the most, the biggest trend that I've noticed recently is sort of related to affiliate marketing. And I'm excited and scared about it, to be honest. You know, we've all read articles at the time that we're recording this podcast about TikTok and how it is monetizing its platform with TikTok Shop, and how sort of the ecosystem of TikTok has changed dramatically in the last couple of months, specifically even in the last month. This is very relevant. And what it's doing, we've sort of democratized marketing on the internet by giving a very easy entry point to marketers or influencers to be able to sell product. So I think we'll continue to see that trend unfold. TikTok may not you know, continue to invest as heavily because they're getting a lot of flack for being sort of overly, you know, salesy. And I know that whenever I go on there, someone's immediately selling me something. But I think that the blood is in the water, so to speak. And there are a lot of sharks out there. There are a lot of people who have spent a lot of time and money over the last number of years investing in their own social media presence and presences online. And I think they're going to start to slowly dethrone the major players out there. And you see that in the form of TikTok being like the number one search engine. Last year it was YouTube, which I found to be like exhilarating, exciting, and scary. And you see the juggernauts like a Google starting to lose its market share because it's sort of being democratized a little bit, as I said.
Mm. Yeah. 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 It is interesting how, you know, the waves of the different technologies kind of supplant themselves. And even though you might say that Google is a monopoly in one area, but they're because technology is just so dynamic, they're not really a monopoly, you know, in the larger sense, because they are competing against, you know, against Facebook and TikTok and whatever, and then whatever the next one is going to be after TikTok. So, yeah, very interesting. So to close the conversation, thank you so much. But I do want to ask you one very important question, and that is, what kind of advice would you give an upcoming new marketer?
The advice I would give a new marketer is similar to what we've already talked about a little bit, in that we really have to be very focused on what is working. And why is that hard? It seems obvious. Well, it's hard because every day we as marketers are being marketed to and being sold something. We're being sold a new advertising platform, a new technology, a new service provider. Everything seems appealing when you're looking for an edge. But I would caution every marketer to take a very slow and steady and measured approach to trying new things. And don't believe everything you read. I've seen over my career, you know, marketing platforms and widgets and technologies come and go faster than probably anything else. So I wouldn't assume that anything is going to work. If you have something that's working, double down on it, triple down on it, and don't necessarily be tempted by all the things that are tempting us. I mean, they're putting like cakes and cookies and slices of pizza around us, but we're on a diet and we have to stick to that diet.
Yeah, and I will admit I'm not doing so well since Christmas. So
we all think January is going to be better, but
yep. And I didn't do dry January, so that didn't help either.
Yeah, that's not an easy one to do.
No, I know exactly. I did maybe a dry Wednesday once, but that
there you go.
Alex, thank you so much, and really appreciate it. And your very interesting story and everything like that. And oh, you didn't get to tell us about couch.com and how you came about obtaining that URL.
Yeah, I like this story because it's pretty interesting. I think the URL space of buying and selling domains is more like the Wild West than I've ever experienced in my past. And I say that because the prices for things, it's really, there's no standardization to it. There are comps that you can sort of compare one domain sale against another one, but it's very hard to compare because there's so many variables and intangibles associated. At the end of the day, couch.com was only worth to me what I think I can make of it, and it was worth to the seller what they wanted for it. And similar to like what my dad used to tell me, I used to go to flea markets and antique shows with my parents, so they're always like negotiating and bargaining every weekend. And I remember my father teaching me that something is only worth what someone is willing to pay for it. And this is sort of the prime example. It was a lot of money. I tried to negotiate, but it turns out that the owner of couch.com has owned it since the 1990s. And they happen to be a very successful entrepreneur who is not short on funds. And and was very successful and knowledgeable in the online space. So negotiating through this broker, the broker basically let me know immediately that there would be no negotiation because this person's happy to hang on to it until it, you know, until it raises in value. But at the end of the day, I connected with that entrepreneur and sort of explained my vision for this. And we were able to come to a financial agreement that's very alternative, and I don't need to get into the details. But it's it was an alternative way of looking at it that works for both parties. So I'm very grateful for that. And also, you know, it was quite an interesting road to get there.
Very interesting. Yeah, you're right about something like a URL. There are so many intangibles. And to your point, it's not necessarily value or what might be value versus what you're going to pay for it. I mean, clearly there's that, but there's also just kind of the entrepreneurial side of the seller that has to come into the equation. And if they don't need the money, then they can wait for as long as they want, especially if they have a domain name that is, a single word domain. It's five letters. And it's such an important piece of furniture or something that's highly searched in the furniture industry. Man, yeah, that's tough. So, well, the good news for you is you still have all your hair. So it didn't cost you all your hair.
For now. But for now. I have a lot of bottles of Just for Men in my cabinet just to make sure that, you know, I stay keeping, you know, this youthful glow.
Very good. Thank you. Well, again, thank you so much. And where can people find out more about you and your company?
Yeah. So couch.com is our URL. Our About Us page has a little about me. If you've listened to this, you probably have learned and understood more than that page will tell you. I love connecting with people. I'm a very communicative person. So if anyone of your listeners would like to reach out to me, my email is quite simple. It's alex@couch.com. And I'd love to connect.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Alex, so much. And thank you for participating. And to the audience, please stay tuned for many other videos in this series of The Backstory on Marketing and AI. And please visit marketingmachine.prorelevant.com if you'd like to get a free excerpt of my book, The Post-COVID Marketing Machine. Alex, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Guy.